same part of the country that you would get this sort of Ohio, and you've gathered from my comments and the differences, Ohio is a good state for enforcing these things if you're the employer. It was not uncommon to get this sort of Ohio, Georgia back and forth in a matter, trying to get in a particular forum. Georgia actually threw a constitutional amendment in November of 2010, and it's a sort of a complicated procedure. Anybody who's come across it will be familiar with. But in effect, through a constitutional amendment, who joined what I would call the mainstream majority rule, reasonableness kind of rule on that. So, you know, Georgia, big state, obviously. So that was an important development. And some of the details of that are still being figured out by the courts, as you might imagine. Texas, you know, even larger state, has historically had some very complicated rules on enforcing non-competes, particularly as far as what constitutes sufficient consideration, and it's, you know, beyond our scope to get into that. Those of you who are in or have practiced in Texas at all will be familiar with that. You know, very, very hard to sort of read these cases in the past and be able to give an employer sort of reliable guidance on what they mean. Texas Supreme Court case in 2011 very much sort of brought Texas more into the mainstream, though there have been some decisions since. But certainly compared to 10 years ago or something, Texas is closer to the mainstream. And then the last one, a little more recent, is there's a...
Esquire CLE's first verification code is the word GRILL. G-R-I-L-L. GRILL. Esquire CLE's first verification code is the word GRILL. G-R-I-L-L. GRILL.
Illinois Court of Appeals decision, Fifield, that suggested that continuing employment may not be sufficient consideration. That's not the state's highest court, but the state's highest court refused to hear it. So generally, I feel like you tend to see a lot of headlines that non-competes are becoming harder to enforce. I feel like you see those on an ongoing basis when you stop and look at what the key developments are. I'm not sure that's actually true. I think sometimes that may be wishful thinking by people who don't think they should be enforceable. But these examples illustrate, I mean, different states are going different directions at any given time. Because I've been, you know, doing this long enough to say that I think, you know, generally I'm not sure the overall balance changes much over the course of time. Maybe something will cause it to. But this kind of gives you a flavor of what you need to be aware of these things. And if you are in a state and knew the law 10 years ago as a practitioner, you want to make sure you're sort of touching these bases. And not only being aware of states, if you're writing these for an employer, states in which the employer could be competed with, as I say, probably not entirely grammatically correct, but hopefully descriptive, but also, you know, what's going on in those states, because they're moving targets for sure. I do want to mention California briefly. It's obviously such an important state as an economy. As I said before, I just want to throw it up on a slide, that by state statute, non-competes, with very few exceptions, are unenforceable in California. The things you sort of think, oh, we'll work around that, don't necessarily work. There's a doctrine called inevitable disclosure, and in virtually all states, you can enforce reasonable confidentiality agreements. Almost all states have the Uniform Trade Secrets Statute, which codifies, in effect, confidentiality, whether you have an agreement or not, with certain requirements. The inevitable disclosure is a sort of slowly developing doctrine that's more supported in some states than others, which says that even if there's not a non-compete, an employee might be enjoined from employment with a new employer if the employee would inevitably disclose protected trade secret information at that employer. So, if you think of an industry dominated by two big companies, where in the employee at company, an employee leaves company A, has company A's secret formula, a court might, that recognizes the doctrine of inevitable disclosure, might enjoin the employee from working at company B, because employee can't go work at company B without inevitably disclosing the secret formula, company A. That's something that's sort of working its way through courts in various states. That doesn't work in California. California is going to be very, very hostile to typically choice of law provisions in other states. And if you're representing, if you're an employer with employees in California, probably, obviously we don't talk in absolutes. I mean, each company needs to talk to its lawyer about its own issues, but very likely going to want a separate agreement for California. We're going to talk a little bit about, gee, how many agreements do we have, do we need to have, and it's administratively difficult to have more agreements rather than fewer, but to take your standard agreement that works in most states into a California court just often isn't going to be pretty, and you know, therefore you may, or your clients may want something that is tailored to California for California employees. It's just a different animal entirely. So, dealing with these differences among state laws, sort of a drafting standpoint, as I said, choice of law is not a silver bullet here. Certainly, particularly if you're in a pro-enforcement state like Ohio, you want your state's law, and you know, typically we want our own state's law on things. So I'm not saying you shouldn't draft that, but generally, and I referenced this a few minutes ago, I'm oversimplifying a little, but a court's going to recognize a choice of law provision if it doesn't offend the public policy of the forum state. And you take these differences on non-competes, which is this modify versus blue pencil, for example, or this is continued employment sufficient consideration. You can very easily win or lose a case based on which state's law is being applied. So typically, a court is going to find it in the forum state is going to say, well, look, it's a completely different result depending on which state's law you apply. Therefore, of course, to enforce an Ohio, for example, choice of law provision in my state, is going to offend our state's public policy. So, choice of law provision standing by itself is pretty, you know, it's not going to be sufficient. More important, not bulletproof, but more important is choice of forum and venue. And as I say here on the slide, even California, no disrespect to California, is going to often enforce a choice of venue provision. And so the stronger you can make this, the better. And we'll, in a little bit, I've given you a sample agreement, and it's 5A in that sample agreement. So, you know, we say it as strongly as we can that, listen, you were consenting to the exclusive jurisdiction of, you know, often in our case, Franklin County, Ohio, or somewhere in Ohio, but consent, you know, waive any objection to venue, consent to it, it's the exclusive place you can bring it, bring it somewhere else or for somebody else to bring it on your behalf, like your future employer, as a material breach, etc. Is that going to work 100% of the time? No, but it's going to work much more than a choice of law standing by itself. Certainly, when you get into the litigation side of these things, not sure this is good public policy, but getting to court first matters. Again, beyond our scope to go into the rules on that in great detail, but certainly as a practical matter, I can tell you it matters, which may encourage litigation more than makes sense as a matter of policy, but it does matter. So that is sort of the summary of the differences on state laws, and as I say, I think critically important stuff. And even if you worked in this area some, I think a lot of people get some education on that point. So we'll talk about some of the other sort of strategic aspects of drafting these things and enforcing them. You know, starting with drafting, and we'll reach back to some of the state by state stuff here. But some of these principles aren't issued or standalone. They're not necessarily on relate to these state law issues. So, competing risks. On the one hand, your client wants sufficient protection. And one of the attachments we'll get to is the little exercise that hopefully is helpful to clients in thinking about what they really need. But obviously your client wants to be protected from competition on the one hand. You don't want to have agreement that's not aggressive enough. But on the other hand, and this does reference the state-by-state issue, which is you don't want to end up with nothing. So go back to my Ohio, one county, one year, on the ground person. In that case, to say 5 years nationwide, that really is overreaching from what that company could reasonably have needed. And if you take that Indiana scenario, that employer could have ended up with nothing. So the general rule, I do like to encourage employers to, actually don't just be, even if you say, hey, we're in a good enforcement state, yeah, understand what you're saying, Bill, about these different states, but we'll take that risk. And that happens. That's not a ridiculous decision to make, depending on your objectives. But even if you're going to say, okay, listen, I'm not going to psych out all 43 states we do business in or something, we're going to go with our choice of law and choice of venue, and hopefully that works. I still encourage the employer to, let's think about what we really need. Let's have a memo in the file that says what that is, and let's draft to that, because that's going to be easier to enforce than just saying, let's just go broad. We're in a state that's better to enforce. They'll modify it. So, as I said, clearly you got to talk about which states you're in. Be thinking about that. Talk about the business need, and it's administratively not feasible typically to have, can't tailor these agreements employee to employee. Client's going to spend too much on lawyers to do that, and they're also going to make mistakes. You want something that's sustainable and manageable, but understand that different kinds of positions pose different risks. So employers who go get a non-compete off of the internet and say, this is what we're going to have everybody sign, if they're really serious about enforcing those things, that may not work. And so, for example, in sales, let's think about, why do we have a non-compete in sales? It's typically to, why is it reasonable to have